Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shri Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vinata Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pachani Nivase Sisanivani Paskatyade Satyani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Chashi Rupam Sagrajat Tam Sagana Raghunatam Vitams Tam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parichana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Tripapati Vishcha Kipasindriya Vatap Tichana Pavaneva Vaishnavam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So it's October 2nd, 2019, Soho Temple in London, England. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Elements of Material Creation, Text 40. Janma,
Janma.
Birth.
Two.
End. Atmataya. By identification with oneself. Pumsaha. Of a person. Sarva bhavena.
Completely.
Burida. Almost charitable Uddhava.
Vishaya.
Of the body. Svikritim. The acceptance. Prahu is called. Yata. Just as. Swapna. A dream. Mana rataha. Or a mental fantasy. What does mana rata mean literally?
Chariot.
A mental chariot. Do you ever feel like your mind's just a wild chariot out of control going and running around? Yeah. Translation. Almost charitable Uddhava. What is called birth is simply a person's total identification with a new body. One accepts the new body just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream or a fantasy as reality. Purport. Identification with one's material body surpasses the mere affection and attachment one feels for the bodies of relatives or friends. The word sarva bhavena here shows that one totally accepts the material body to be oneself, just as one completely accepts the existence, the experience of a dream as real. Mere imagination without practical action is called a daydream. The mental concoction that occurs in a sleeping state is called a dream. Our identification with our own body and our blind acceptance of bodily relationships as permanent constitute a prolonged form of dreaming or fantasy in which one imagines oneself to be separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The term birth, therefore, does not refer to the generation of a new entity, but to the blind acceptance by the spirit soul of a new material body. Janma twat mataya pumsa sarva bhavena burida vishaya svikritim prahur yata swapna manoratha. Almost charitable Uddhava, what is called birth, is simply a person's total identification with a new body. One accepts the new body just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream or a fantasy as reality. So we end at 8:30, is that correct?
Yeah. Questions as well, if you want. Go on a bit.
So here's a very common metaphor given in the Shastra, that life is simply a
dream,
swapna. And here's also manoratha. It could be like a mental wandering when you're awake. Right? Interesting, the purport. Mere imagination without practical action is called a daydream. Right, when we're just imagining. And I would I would imagine that if the scriptures were written today, that there'd also be examples of, you know, computer games and films and things of that nature, which is also a kind of manoratha, isn't it? Yes? You're going on the mental chariot of the producer or the director or the writer of the game, but it's still a mental chariot. So life is simply a dream. And of course, this is often misunderstood by some of the impersonalists and the voidists to mean that it doesn't have any existence at all. But dreams have some existence, don't they? What is a dream?
Illusory reality.
Well, it's illusory reality, okay, but what's the reality of it?
It's a collection of many different passive thoughts that you've had throughout the day, so it does have some basis in reality.
Okay, because so it has some basis in reality because it's based on the thoughts we've had and experiences we've had during the day. What else is the reality of a dream? What is it?
The emotions you experience.
It's also emotions, so thoughts and emotions. What else? Yes? But yes, sometimes you can actually work off karma in a dream. That's given in a purport in the fourth canto.
Desires.
Desires, okay.
Temporary and you can't remember.
Well, that's the illusory part, but I'm looking for the reality part right now.
You think, I mean, when you're in the dream, you think that you're that person, so like, say a tiger's chasing you.
I've never dreamed of a tiger. And Prabhupada often talks about dreaming about tigers. I personally never dreamt about tigers. I have dreamt about people chasing me with guns. Probably from, you know, watching TV or movies or something like that. But especially when I was a child, I used to have dreams of somebody chasing me with a gun. But never a tiger. Yeah, but there's also some reality going on in the brain, yeah? You know, the sleep scientists, they can hook up your brain. It was the EEG, and there's certain electrical impulses happening. So there's something happening. They can tell the difference between when you're dreaming and when you're in deep sleep by the electrical impulses. You know, our eyes also move.
Yeah.
You know, so our eyes are closed, but our you can see the eyeball moving around under the closed eyelid. And if you've ever seen a dog sleeping, sometimes they're running in their sleep. You ever seen that? Yeah, and that's how you know they're dreaming. Little tiny babies will suck in their sleep. They're dreaming that they're drinking milk. Have you ever seen an infant when they're dreaming? So there's something happening in the body. Not much, because part of what happens when we go to sleep is that there's chemicals that paralyze us more or less. And the people where that doesn't work very well end up sleepwalking. Isn't it? Yes, because in our dreams, if we're running, but we start getting up and running in our sleep, it will be a problem. Some of the artificial sleep, I think there's one medicine called Ambien that particularly has this problem, that people will walk around in their sleep. If they can't fall asleep naturally, they're taking this chemical to make them sleep. And sometimes they'll even drive their car in their sleep, which is, of course, very dangerous. But, you know, they'll go to the refrigerator, they'll eat something. They'll wake up in the morning and find, you know, breadcrumbs in their bed because they were moving. So something's happening. When we're dreaming, there's something happening in the body and there's something happening in the mind. And the mind also has some substance. Like this morning I was hearing Prabhupada saying, we can't see the mind. But sometimes we can see the mind. When can we see the mind? When it's a ghost. Some people can see ghosts. Fortunately, I've never been able to see a ghost. I have been in a place where I could tell there were ghosts. So the old temple in New York on 55th Street, which was as good of a location as Soho Street for New York, but a much, 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 much bigger building. We could have about 1,500 people fit into that temple room. There were 11 floors plus a downstairs where we had a restaurant. Restaurant could seat about 150 people. So it was a huge building. But the building before we got it used to be a nursing home. And a lot of people died there. And long story, but anyway, my husband and I and our youngest son, our oldest son, who was very young at that time, but our oldest son, who was a baby at the time, we stayed one night in the building before anyone else moved into it. So it's a long story. And at one point, my husband went back to the Brooklyn Temple to get our stuff, so I was in the building, just myself and the baby. It was really dirty. Remember, I had to keep him in a, what do you call it, a pram? Mm. We call stroller. So he wouldn't crawl on the floor. And while I was there, the lift was going up and down by itself. The windows were opening and closing by themselves, and the doors were opening and closing by themselves. It didn't bother me. It was just like, oh, that's interesting. But I didn't see the ghosts. I could just tell that they were there. But there are people who can see ghosts. And when they see ghosts, they see what? What does a ghost look like? Any idea? You ever heard any stories?
Subtle body looks like their previous body.
It looks like their previous body, yes. So if it was, you know, some woman who died, the ghost looks like a woman. If it was a man who died, the ghost looks like a man. And it looks, you know. I remember reading someone who saw a ghost, and the woman's hair was like not one hair out of place. And when they told the relatives, they said, yes, that was our auntie. She never had a hair out of place. So how is it that they're seeing a ghost body that looks like the previous body? Yeah?
The mind's impressions,
yes, as Krishna explains, that we get this body based on the impressions of the mind, that we get senses grouped around the mind. So as the mind gets some impressions, we get a body around it, but that means the mind or the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego, has a form. Srila Prabhupada says just like our clothes fit on our body, or you could say our outer clothes, like our jacket, our coat, it fits on them. We also have a shirt and trousers, right? So there's levels of clothes, and ultimately it fits on the body. And because the soul has a form, the subtle body has a form. And because the subtle body has a form, the gross body has a form. So dreams are actions of the subtle body, which has a form, and which occasionally the subtle body's form can be seen. So dreams are not unreal in the sense that they don't have any existence. But they're unreal in that they're not what they appear to be. So I'm having a dream that I'm back in my childhood home, and I'm back with my mother and father and my sisters, and then all of a sudden in the dream I'm out in the country. Yes, everybody has dreams like this? Mm-hmm. Right? But actually I've just been lying in my bed. So something's happened. Prabhupada will say the subtle body actually travels at night. So something happened. My subtle body, which has a form, as in reality, did something. And that can be noticed the eyes in the gross body are moving. There's electrical impulses in the brain. But I haven't done what I dreamt that I did. Now, how do we know we haven't done what we dreamt that we did? Why do we say dreams are not, they don't have much substance to them? There's something. But why do we say they're not what they appear to be? On what basis do we decide that?
On the gross. On the gross body, because it's in bed.
Because the gross body. Well, I could have gone at night back to my childhood home and been with my parents. Why do I decide I didn't do that? I mean, I go someplace during the day and come back to my bed. And I consider that real. Just like I took my Joppa walk today and I was in my room. I came down the stairs. I went outside. I went for a walk. I came back in, I went back to my room. So why don't I decide that the dream is just as substantial? Some thoughts, yes?
The effects of the dream aren't there once you're awake.
There's no continuation.
There's not a continuation, okay.
Say if you're hurt or something.
Okay, that's a good evidence. Any other evidence why I don't think that the dreams are substantial and I think my waking life is substantial? I mean, sometimes I've woken up, gone back to sleep, and there was a continuation of the dream. Has that ever happened to you? You had a dream, you woke up, and you went back to sleep, and the dream continued. So there is sometimes a continuation in that dream life of the dream. And I've had recurring dreams. Have you had recurring dreams? When I was a child, I used to have a recurring dream that I was falling. And sometimes I'd wake up on the floor. Yeah?
You could say, Prabhupada sometimes speak about daydream and night dream. So in one sense,
You're jumping to my next point. Any other thoughts about what's the difference? Why do I accept my daydream as real and my night dream as unreal?
Illusion.
But that's not a reason. Why do I conclude it's an illusion?
Something has a temporary.
Huh?
It's temporary.
Well, everything else is temporary too. Yeah?
Fully awake.
I don't know that when I'm in a dream. When I'm in a dream, I feel like I'm awake. Don't you feel like you're awake when you're in a dream? When you're in the dream, it feels like it's actually happening to you.
So when you wake up, you identify with the material body, and so that's different from the subtle body, and you take the material body to be more real than the subtle body.
Okay, but I wonder why. I mean, when I'm dreaming, I don't take my awake life as real.
You have to feed the physical body. You don't have to feed the subtle body.
You have to feed the subtle body. I always like to give the example of one time when I took a little nap on a fast day. I was fasting from food and water, and I took a little rest. And during my dream, I was eating because I was so hungry. And not only was I eating, I remember I was eating pakoras, and I was also drinking water, and I drank a cup of water in my dream, and I drank another cup of water in my dream, and another cup of water in my dream, and another cup. Finally, I took a big jug of water, and I was like pouring this jug of water down my throat. And then in my dream, I thought, something's funny. Well, I'm drinking all this water, and I'm still thirsty. Something strange is going on here. And then I woke up, and I realized I'd been eating dream food and dream water. But in my dream, the food had a taste. Haven't you ever eaten in a dream?
Yeah.
The food, it had a taste. I had the experience that I was eating. By the way, we do have to feed the subtle body. We just feed it differently. We don't feed it food, food. Well, one reason I've come up with is that other people don't corroborate our dreams. Mm-hmm. So if I have a dream that I'm with you, you don't have that same dream that you're with me. So if I say, you know, I dreamt that we went out to the manor together, and you say, well, I didn't go to the manor together with you. And so, but the waking dream, because we have a collective experience. Of course, that doesn't always happen. Sometimes someone will say, we did this and this, and I don't remember doing this. Right? But we have some sort of collective experience where other people verify, yeah, we did that together. Or, yes, I verify that that happened. So that's, I think, the main reason we take this as a reality, because I have sense perception in my dreams. I eat things, I taste things, I touch things, I smell things, I go places in my dreams. And when I'm doing that, I feel it's very real. Sometimes I become very frightened in a dream, yeah? Mm-hmm. We have emotions in a dream, we're very happy in a dream, so forth and so on. So, of course, nowadays we have a good example of collective illusions, as I was saying, in film and in computer games. So when we say, you know, when Shastra says a dream, a person may say, yeah, but I know a dream isn't real. But, you know, in a film, people can get very involved in the film, but they forget their reality. Now, many, many years ago, my mother took the kids and I to see a documentary in a huge IMAX 3D. It's like the screen is 8 stories high, and you wear special glasses so everything looks three-dimensional. And it really seemed real. I mean, and I don't know if you've ever been to something like that, but whoa! This guy was on a boat, and the water, you jerk back because you think you're going to get splashed with water from this boat. I mean, it was, you really got fooled into thinking that you were there. And it was a collective experience. And I've watched people play computer games, which, thank you, Krishna, I've never played any, but I've watched people play them, and they get very, very absorbed. And that's a collective experience. They're playing with their friends, and they'll talk to their friends afterwards, and they'll, you know, I've seen teenage boys talking to their friends using the name from the game. You ever seen this? Or maybe some of you have done this. And they talk to each other as if they're still that character. And, you know, oh yeah, you know, we killed the monsters and we got the gold. And I'm sitting there thinking, what in the world? But because it's this collective experience, it has some feeling of reality. Now, of course, we know, we always keep something, again, I haven't played these games, but I'm assuming that the person keeps some awareness that they have an identity outside the game. You know, and I had some awareness in that IMAX 3D that I was sitting in a theater. Not much. I mean, I'll tell you honestly, I didn't have much. It was very immersive. But you have a little bit. Whereas in this illusion, we have almost none. We have almost no awareness that I'm not really doing what I'm doing, and I'm not really where I think I am, and I'm not really who I think I am. It's almost total. It's not total. At least when we're in a human body, it's like a little rays of sun come through the clouds of illusion. What's our indication in the human body that maybe what I think I'm experiencing here is not what it appears to be? When do we have that little opening?
Death?
Certainly. That when someone dies, right? I was there when my mother died, and the body's there, and they're not there. It was interesting, though, when she was alive, I remember just a few years after, actually, when I was in New York, and I was trying to explain to her how we're not this body. And I said, just like when someone dies, the body's there, but they're not there. She's like, yeah, that's true. You know, with death, the body's there, but they're not there. And I thought, oh my goodness, my mother finally got it. Then I said, so we're different from the body. She said, I don't believe that. Fortunately, in the last week of her life, she came to believe that. So death, when else do we get some little idea that this life is not what we think it is? Yeah.
In moments of anxiety.
Sometimes in moments of anxiety, yeah. When else?
Body changing from...
Life. Sometimes when the body's changing, yes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you have to get a new driver's license. I don't know any of you guys even drive in London, but anyway. If you get a new driver's license like every 10 years, and then you have to put down your eye color, your hair color. So when I was applying for a new license about 20 years ago, and my daughter was there with me, and I said, brown or gray? She looks at me and says, gray. And it was shocking, because my whole life I'd always written on all the forms brown. You know, my whole life, brown, 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 brown. And then I couldn't write brown anymore. I'm like, who am I? Yeah, the body changes. You're like, who am I? I thought I had brown hair. I thought I was an entity that had brown hair. And I'm not that entity anymore. Yeah, or you know, when, as I say, it was one day I looked in the mirror and it wasn't my face anymore. It was my mother's face. I was like, how did my mother get in my mirror? And yeah, these ties when you're just kind of, who am I? When's another time we have this little indication?
During meditation.
During meditation, yes. You have some little indication that maybe I'm not this body. Some other times.
Some people have out-of-body experiences during operation or something.
Yes, well that's very dramatic. So sometimes, I think you've had one.
Yeah.
So sometimes there'll be an accident or an operation or something and the person is actually out of their body. And for some people, this is very shocking. You know, I've read many people's writing about their out-of-body experiences, and many people will see their body and not even identify with it at all. They'll see it and they'll think, boy, that guy's really in bad shape. I hope somebody comes to help him. And they're like, wait a minute, that's me down there. What's another instance where we have some idea? Sometimes when we remember past lives, whether spontaneously or through hypnosis or something like that.
When we meet self-realized souls?
When we meet self-realized souls, definitely. It happens a lot with material success. Material success is a time when almost everybody has a little idea that this world is not what it appears to be. Why is that?
Because they're chasing after the highest kind of level of self-gratification they can get, and once they achieve everything they wanted, they see there's still no satisfaction.
Yes. When you get what you want and you're not satisfied, like when I was drinking all that water in a dream, and I was still thirsty. And then in my dream, I got some awareness. In my dream itself, there's something funny going on here. And you find this happens to pretty much everyone when we get what we want and it's not satisfying. And this particularly happens if it's a big thing. You know, you finally get the house you wanted, you got the degree. You know, I was speaking at a university the other day, and I was saying, you know, it was this big day when I got my PhD, but the next day I was the same person. I wasn't any smarter. You know, it's the same person. And you're like, well, I thought that when I would do this thing, you know, when I would buy this car or buy this house, or I would graduate, or I'd get this job, or I have my wedding, or my child is born, or I travel to another country, or I make my first, whatever, £1,000, or, you know, whatever it is that we're aiming for, and we're thinking, when I get there, when I get there, when I get there, and you get there, and you're like, something's funny. Something's weird happening. I got here, and I'm just exactly the same. I didn't become happier. I noticed Sri Prahlad's going to be giving classes on kirtan. Yeah. So he got his PhD in psychology. And one of the things that I remember him talking about was that, you know, when people get some wonderful thing, get some big inheritance, or they win the lottery, within 6 months, they're just as happy as they were before. And if somebody becomes paralyzed, within 6 months, they're just as happy as they were before. You know, there is not some long-term effect. It doesn't change who we are. So there are moments when we get an idea that what looks like it's happening and what's actually happening must not be the same. So just like in a film, it looks like there's people doing things, but it's not. It's just lights on a screen. Like our dream is electrical activity in the brain. I think that, you know, I'm having dinner with my parents, but it's just electrical impulses in the brain. So we think we're watching some movie star, you know, whatever, chasing the bad guy, but it's just lights on the screen. Or you could say it was actors, you know, in some set. So something's happening. Unlike the impersonalists and the voidists, we say something is happening. It's not that nothing is happening. But what's happening and what we imagine is happening is very different. I mean, it's so different to be astonishing. Like Krishna says, ahankara vimutha makarta hamiti manite. Only a fool thinks they're actually doing anything. And Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita in the 5th and the 13th chapter, we're not doing anything. We're just the what? We're just the observer. We're not actually even experiencing anything. We're just observing. When we eat in a dream, we're not really eating anything. We have some imagination that we're eating anything. Because all experiences happen within the mind. You know, if we're under anesthesia and our mind is down, somebody can cut us, we don't feel it. All sensations happen in the mind. They don't happen in the body. There's no sensation of eating in the body. The sensation of eating is in the mind. All feelings of bodily pleasure, all feelings of bodily pain, all emotional pleasure and pain, it's just in the mind. Manovrittaha. It's basically all imagination. It's engineered by the three modes of nature under the direction of the Supreme. Why does it have to be imagination? because it's not who I am. Jivera Swarupai. Say it again. Krishnaranichidasa. Jivera Swarupai Krishnaranichidasa. My Swarup, my own form, always Nitya. It's always a servant of Krishna. That's who I am. I can't be not a servant of Krishna in reality. It's not possible. It's who I am. So if I don't want to be a servant of Krishna, I have to just have some imagination that I'm something else. I can't actually be something else. I just can't. So if we say, I don't want to be a servant of Krishna, Krishna says, all right, I'll give you a fantasy where you can imagine that you're so many different things. Right? It's just saying here. But one imagines oneself to be separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because it's not who I am, I'm not satisfied with it. The most satisfying thing is to be fully who I am. Even in the material illusion, that's a fact. Am I correct? When I can be fully authentic about who I am, right? When we can be with people who just accept us for who we are, and we can really display who I am, even in an illusory sense, it's extremely satisfying. In fact, it is the most satisfying thing. No? So who am I, really? And as long as I'm trying to be something that I'm not fully satisfied. And therefore, I take body after body after body. Oh, well, I tried to be satisfied pretending that I was British. That didn't make it. Okay, let me try to be satisfied pretending I'm French. And that doesn't make it. Okay, let me try to be satisfied pretending I'm Peruvian. No, that doesn't make it. Let me try to be satisfied pretending I'm a man. Let me try as a woman. Let me try as a dog. Let me try as a demigod. Let me try as an outgoing person. Let me try as a shy person. Let me try it. Let me try to be a musician, maybe an athlete. You know, we're like some little kid putting on costumes. You know, my oldest son, they have for their kids a big box of dress-ups. You know, all different costumes that you can put on. Let me try this costume. Let me try that costume. Let me try this role. Let me try that role. So that's all that birth is. That's all that birth in our life and our death is. It's just Krishna compares it to putting on clothes, doesn't he? Yes? And we're just trying on different costumes and doing different roles. And it's all imagination. In one sense, it's not really happening at all to us. It's something that's happening, but it's not really happening to us. Like you watch a movie, it's not really happening to you, right? The hero in the film saves the world with 3 seconds to spare, right? Well, hanging off a helicopter or something. And you feel like you're the hero. You know, that's why people watch these things. I've saved the world with 3 seconds to spare while hanging off a helicopter. But you haven't. All you've done is, you know, lost whatever, however much they charge for movies, £8. That's all you've done. You just eaten popcorn and lost 8 pounds. That's it. We're thinking, you know, I'm the hero of the world. So it's the same way. We're just observing what's happening, and we're thinking, you know, and we're thinking everything's so important. And then we put our affection, our attachment, our desires into the things of this world. So that's the real shame. Just exactly like people watch movies and they fall in love with the movie heroes that are just actors. They're not even super. It's not really Superman or whatever. It's just some guy, some ordinary person who can't fly at all. You know, it's just. But people get attached and they buy Superman dolls, right? Or whatever the latest thing is, Star Wars dolls. They play with their toys and they get lunch boxes with it. And yes? So we've done exactly the same thing. We become attached to our mother and father and our spouse and our children and our brothers and sisters and our country and our religion and our ethnicity and other people who have our similar mentality. Just exactly like people are collecting, you know, toys and memorabilia from some movie. And thinking, you know, these are real people. And I think people get very attached to these characters, yeah? That's why on the news, on TV, they have the same broadcasters all the time. You start to think you know them. And you feel you can trust, oh, I know this guy. I hear him every night. That's why people watch the same TV shows every week. They feel like they know them. They feel like, these are my neighbors, you know. And we get the same thing in this world. And we glorify in this world people who will sacrifice for the sake of these relationships. That's one of the main glorifications. The person who sacrificed for their family. Yes? Right? They give up everything. They'll give up their job. They'll give up an offer to make £1 million. They'll give up fame to take care of their child or their spouse or their mother. Oh, they're the heroes. Isn't it? You sacrifice, sacrifice for your country. I gave my arm for my country. People do that, yes? Do they do that? Do they give their arm, literally? For a piece of dirt? That's on this side of the mountain, or this side of the river, or this side of the sea? My piece of dirt on this side of the channel is better than your piece of dirt on that side of the channel. And I sacrifice my arm and my eye. And we think that's wonderful. Am I correct about this? Yes? And those of us who sacrifice all those things for God, we're seen as very peculiar. I was really meditating on this in the last few days, how those people who are interested in transcendence, we have an opposite value system. Doesn't Krishna also say that? How does he put that?
The time of awakening is...
It's the time of sleep, right? You really see this in Soho, don't you? It always takes me a few days to be able to sleep when I'm here. When we go to sleep, they wake up. And when we wake up, they go to sleep. Isn't it? Right? They finally decide they're finished partying and that's when it's time for Mangal Arati. Right? Finally gets quiet outside. You're like, oh, now I'm going to sleep. Oh, now it's time to wake up. And it's opposite. So the view of the materialist is you sacrifice everything for the family and the society and the nation, everything that we identify with in this false identity. And the view of the transcendentalist is you sacrifice everything that has to do with the false identity to regain your reality. I mean, like Jesus said, if you love your father or mother more than me, you're not worthy of me. And he says, I come to bring a sword between family members. You know, one of the most intense examples is of Ramchandra, who sacrificed his relationship with his wife for the sake of the country. See, we would glorify people doing exactly the opposite. Like that king who abdicated here because he fell in love with some woman. I forget his name. Yes? British?
Edward.
So he always isn't that romantic. So we glorify people who do that. Don't we? I mean, think about it. I really like all of you to think about this. Think about, like, what are the big stories that we've grown up with in our life if we haven't been brought up as devotees, if we've brought up in the material world. If you think about who are the heroes, and you'll notice that they'll sacrifice the world even. They'll sacrifice saving the world to help their girlfriend.
a Romeo and Juliet.
There you go, yes. The stories that we've been brought up with are people who will, that their focus is on their family and their country, and they'll sacrifice other things for that. And for us, we have the opposite stories. We have the story of, you know, Mahaprabhu leaving home with a 16-year-old wife and a widowed mother with no other children at home to find God. I mean, of course, he was God, but he's giving that example. That those are our heroes. And I think the fact that we have this opposite idea of heroism, it makes it sometimes a little difficult about practical things in our Hare Krishna movement. Isn't it? You know that sometimes we just don't take care of our duties in the world in the name of transcendence. And so there's sometimes a pushback in our own movement that we should become more concerned with the temporary relationships. It's really interesting. I've heard many, 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 many devotees say that we love God by loving our relationships in this world. And I personally heard Srila Prabhupada say that that's not true. I was right there with Srila Prabhupada, 1976 in New York, and our oldest son was about a year and a half at the time. He was sitting on my lap, and Prabhupada looked at me and said, just like this mother is loving her child without expectation of return, in the same way you should love Krishna. And my father said to Prabhupada, well, loving her son, help her to love Krishna. Prabhupada said, no. He said, but loving Krishna will help her to love her son. Our view of reality is the opposite to the materialist. Yes, we want to take care of our family and we want to be good citizens of our country. It's not that we want to use Krishna consciousness as an excuse, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, that Arjuna was trying to use Krishna consciousness as an excuse to be irresponsible. It's not like that. But what we are willing to do is sacrifice everything for the reality, because everything we're sacrificing is nothing anyway. It's a movie. It's a dream. What we're apparently sacrificing is not the reality. So we're sacrificing the illusion for the reality. And most people in the world are sacrificing the reality for the illusion. Now, what happens if I sacrifice everything for Krishna and I do it properly, then I see this material energy as it is. And what is the material energy to a Krishna conscious person?
Temporary.
It's temporary, but now I'm looking for a positive.
Part of Krishna.
And I will see the universe as Krishna's what?
Energy.
Not just creation.
Not mercy.
Not just that. We're all the way in the 11th canto. This was back in the 2nd canto. We weren't actually allowed to get here. Yes, Krishna's
body.
We actually weren't allowed to read this until we read that 2nd canto. So we weren't allowed to read about how the material energy is a dream, material life is a dream, until we understand that this universe is Krishna's body. So the Krishna conscious person, when they wake up to reality, do they see the material world as Dukalayama Shasvatam? Does a self-realized soul see the material world as Dukalayama Shasvatam? No. What does a self-realized soul see? The Dukalayama Shasvatam is for one who's in Amaya. How does a self-realized soul see the world?
Everything is part of Krishna.
It's actually part of Krishna, part of Krishna's body. And a person who sees the world from a Krishna conscious perspective, what is their experience? What is their emotional experience in the world?
Happiness.
It's not a place of misery at all. Because they're not in illusion. And a person in that consciousness, Krishna says they have no duties to do in the world, and they have no reason not to do any duties in the world. They can do them or not do them, depending on their
consciousness
and their
service.
If Krishna would be pleased by taking care of my family, I take care of my family. If Krishna is pleased that I take sannyas and go off in the forest, I take sannyas and go off in the forest. So that's our understanding of the material world. Our understanding of the material world is this is really a miserable place. If you're in material consciousness, material consciousness is just awful because it's not real. It's not who I am. And all of our great heroism and sacrifice within that material illusion is all rubbish. It's not glorious. It's not heroic. It's not inspiring. It's just stupid. You know, it's like neglecting your studies so you can save somebody in your computer game. It's just like... It's nonsensical. But when one comes to Krishna consciousness and sees that the universe is Krishna's body and that I am the soul and that I am part of Krishna, then everything is happy. There's no difficulty. And one can lead... the Pandavas were very responsible. One can lead a life that looks to other people like a responsible life in the world, but the Krishna conscious person doesn't have that understanding at all. It's just service. I may have a service here, I may have a service there. Whatever it may be. You know, like Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami, get out of your home. It's like a pit in which, you know, people pass stool and your relatives are like worms in the stool. And he told Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, go home, serve your parents. So then it just becomes a matter of service. Stand up and fight, Arjuna, pick up your Gandiva bow and string it and kill your enemies. And then when that was finished, Arjuna couldn't even string his bow anymore. And he understood, it's done. That service is done. So then it's just a matter of service. It's not a matter of identity, and it's not a matter of, you know, being righteous in the world. So we can see what are the results of each. When I identify with this body, when I identify with the world, when I identify with my family and my society and my community and my religion, and all this, I'm not happy. Do we all experience this? We'll get little bits of little partial happiness here and there that unfortunately can keep us going for a long time. And when I identify as a soul and Krishna's servant, and that I'm functioning in this world just as service, and I see Krishna everywhere and in everything, then I'm happy. And it's an increasing kind of happiness, and it's a happiness that's not dependent on this or that circumstance. Yes, we all have experiences. Yes. So this is where we want to go to. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, chastisements. Yes?
You have to wait for the mic.
Hare Krishna.
So I haven't got a Puran for the story, but it kind of ties in. There was a pastime where Krishna and the cowherd boy sat with eating lunch, and Krishna wanted to wash his hands, so the cowherd boy turned himself into a river so Krishna could wash his hands. And then, but it's a very kind of dreamlike kind of scenario.
We do have Pramanas of people who turn into rivers.
Okay.
Yeah, it's... With Devahuti, she went back to Vaikuntha, where she lives on a planet with her son. But her body also became a river. And then, of course, Yamuna, is a river, and Ganga is a river. So we have a lot of pramanas of people who are also rivers. They're people and they're rivers.
Right. But yeah, the question was, is that, so in the absolute sense, then that dreamlike quality would actually, there would be an overlay, there would be like an overlap where your conscious reality would take on the actual form of the mind.
That's an interesting way to try to understand it. The spiritual is much more subtle than the mind. You know, it's the ultimate subtle. So we tend to think in illusion that the more solid something is, the more reality it has. But it's actually the reverse. The more subtle something is, the more reality it has. So the spiritual has ultimate reality. But you can have whatever form you want. I mean, even the demigods can do that. The demigods have more subtle bodies and they can change their forms. When Bali was taking over the heavenly planets, the demigods took different forms. So they can turn into birds or whatever. I don't know how they left their planet in different forms so they wouldn't be recognized. So what to speak of the spiritual body? But I don't know if you would compare that to a dream. It's just that it's much more subtle. I don't know if that helps at all. Does that help at all? No, but there's a lot of, like there's descriptions, I think it's in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, it might be in Gopal Champu, that Lalita is singing, and you'll see in India that sometimes around the base of the tree, they put like concrete or stones. Like, you know, we do sometimes, we'll put like maybe a wooden bench, a circular bench around a tree to sit under the shade. So in India you'll see these made out of sometimes concrete or stone. So it's explained that there are these jeweled seats surrounding a tree, and when Lalita sings, they melt, and then they reform into a different shape. So that kind of thing seems to be rather common on that platform. Or, I mean, one of the most interesting things in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopal Kumar is standing by the gate to Vaikuntha, and he's seeing all these beings enter Vaikuntha in all different forms. I mean, some of them look just like Vishnu, and so he gets confused and he thinks they're Vishnu. But there's also all different forms. He says some look like humans, some look like demigods, some look like animals. And some of them, he said, have many associates with them, but they can merge their associates into them. I'm just repeating what Sanatana Goswami says. And then they can again manifest their associates out of them again. Also, emotions are all people. In the books of the Goswamis, it describes, you know, that the Radharani's shyness, or it's a person. So all of their feelings are also people. They're all beings. Imagine if that was your swarup. If that's your swarup, was Radharani's anger, that's who you are. It's really beyond. You know, it's explained that even on this planet, that you, when Maharishi Yudhisthira had this palace built by Maya Danava, because Arjuna and Krishna had saved him from the fire. And it was a palace where it had, like, the building itself had mystic abilities. Maharishi Yudhisthira asked, I think it was Narada, he said, does anybody in the universe have a building as good as this? And Narada says, oh yeah, this is much better. And so he's describing, you know, Indra's assembly hall. And when he gets to Brahma's assembly hall, he says that it has so many dimensions that you can't understand the spatial quality of it. So even in this universe, we don't really understand space or time. You know, the physicists like Einstein, they try to get their head around it, but we really don't understand space and time. Some very good articles in Back to Godhead about time, old articles. So what to speak of a realm beyond space and time? Because the first thing that's created here is time. The glance of Mahavishnu that awakens the pradhan and separates it into the modes of nature, that glance is time. It's also Lord Shiva. So time is the first element, but time has no corresponding sense object to perceive it. And this, the actual reality exists beyond time. Time facilitates illusion. Can we think of a reality beyond time? What does that mean? And then among the elements, the first thing that's created is space. Can we think of a reality that doesn't have space as we understand it? Again, what does that mean? I don't know. Like Prabhupada says, 1 + 1 = 1 and 1 - 1 = 1. I mean, we have a little idea of this in the story Lord Chaitanya tells, where the Lord, where Lord Brahma came to see Lord Vishnu, and the doorkeeper said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm Lord Brahma." "Okay, I'll tell Lord Vishnu." Comes back and he says, "Lord Vishnu wants to know which Lord Brahma." The one with the four heads who made the universe. What's your problem? Okay. Lord Brahma's like, "What's going on?" And he comes in and he says to Lord Vishnu, he says, "I don't understand why the doorkeeper was asking me which Lord Brahma." So Lord Vishnu mentally called all the Brahmas. And Lord Brahma looks around and he's like, millions of them. And some of them have 100 heads, some of them have 10 million heads. But what's really interesting about that particular pastime, was to me, is that each Lord Brahma thought that Krishna was in his universe. So our Lord Brahma saw Vishnu in one place and saw all the other Lord Brahmas in the same place. But each Lord Brahma thought it was just him and Krishna in his universe. So what's going on with space? Or Mother Yasoda looks in Krishna's mouth and she sees herself. She doesn't see a picture or a projection. She actually sees that she's in Krishna's mouth. And Lord Brahma talks about this in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. He said, "I'm in your belly. Because Mother Yasoda saw me in your belly. So I'm in your belly. How am I talking to you outside?" So our concepts of space and time, that's in the beginning of the creation. And the reality exists beyond that. So that somebody becomes a river, I mean, that's kind of small fry compared to that there's no time and space. But perhaps dreamlike in the sense that, you know, in a dream we can instantly teleport. You know, I do that in my dreams all the time. I jump from one place to another. I don't even know how I got there. So there is some kind of warping of space and time in a dream, isn't there? Yes? You ever fallen asleep for 10 minutes and your dream went on for a week? I've sometimes dreamt that I woke up and that I went about my day. And then when I wake up, I don't know what day it is because I thought I already lived that day. So, you know, we have this warping of time and space in our dreams. So in that sense, yes. When you get subtle, more and more subtle, those things don't, as we perceive them, they just don't apply. Therefore, Prabhupada would sometimes say to the devotees, you know, "You don't see anything. What do you think you know?" He's like, you know. He would say that. He'd say, "You're still in your mother's womb. You know, you're not seeing anything. You know, I don't understand that." Anybody else? And we take it so seriously, isn't it? It's really serious. I was just recently in a meeting and somebody asked me, what's this meeting about? I said, oh, we're all trying to think we're very important. So, you know, So let us try to be absorbed today in the reality. Yes? To a Rabbi Kita, to a Bhagavatam Kita.